Accession number 31328, reel 1.
Ready?
Yes.
Austin Baker, reel 1. If we could start with when and where you were born.
I was born in Eastbourne, East Sussex, 27th of December, 1923.
What did your parents do?
My parents at that time ran a small hotel, private hotel as they used to call them. But previous to that, my father had been a huntsman, professional huntsman that is, and my mother was what you might call a cook for the aristocracy in a number of stately homes, and decided to move to Eastbourne and set up a little business. And my father also there ran a small removals business.
Were you involved in the hotel as you were?
Not at all, no. Because I left it really when I was about 17 and moved to Bedford because of the war.
What do you remember of Eastbourne itself as a town and community?
Well, I remember a lot about Eastbourne itself. Obviously, I went to school there. I went to Eastbourne Grammar School. But ever since, I've been to Eastbourne, or that area, practically every year for holidays and things of that sort. But I've never actually lived there on a permanent basis since 1940, end of 1940, when I'd done my school certificate, as it then was, and then we looked like being invaded, of course, and the Battle of Britain came on, and we had relatives at Bedford, and I was evacuated and went to stay with my grandparents. I got a job at Bedford and never permanently went back to Eastbourne after that. But memories of Eastbourne then, of course, are confused, I suppose, with memories of it ever since, because I've always kept in touch with it.
Had you enjoyed school as you were going through the system?
Yes, I think so, reasonably. You know, a lot of things I didn't like about it, because I was no good at sport and never did like sport. So that would have been the same whichever school I'd been at. But it was all right. No complaints about school. The school itself evacuated to Hitchin, and if I'd wanted to go on and do something beyond a school certificate, I could have gone with them, but in fact I left then and went to Bedford instead.
Had you a career in mind as you were?
Yes, I had. I was going to be a librarian, and I'd already had an interview at... Well, I turned up for an interview with a librarian at Eastbourne, but he was called out on Home Guard duty because France was in the process of falling at that very point, and I never did get to see him, in fact. But when I came to Bedford, I transferred to the interest of Bedford Library, and that's where I started work Christmas 1940.
Were you much aware during the late 20s and 30s of the economic and social difficulties and unrest? And
No, I don't think so. I mean, late 20s, I was only 7. The 30s, I was coming up to teenage. But I can't say I took much interest in... I did know about, for example, the fascists versus communists in London, that sort of thing. And in fact, my mother particularly was quite political, true blue Tory, so I heard a lot about the local Tory activities, and I was aware of the people who were in power and not in power in London, because we used to listen to political broadcasts and budget broadcasts and that sort of thing. But it was all over my head, really.
Were you much aware of what was happening in Europe?
No. Oh, wait a minute. Yes, I was. Cancel that. I was. I mean, not in the big picture in a way, but I knew all about the rise of Hitler and that sort of thing, particularly as my sister, who was 10 years older than I am, used to go on exchange holidays to Germany, stayed in Hamburg with a family called Sassenhaus. He was a professor, and the Sassenhaus children used to come over to stay with us in exchange. But even so, they didn't come over and talk all about Hitler or anything of that sort. I mean, they were anti-Hitler, I know that. And in fact, the one girl has since written her autobiography, which I've got somewhere, which has tells all about her resistance to Hitler, and also about her staying in Eastbourne. A rather vulgarised account, really.
At what stage did you become aware that a war was on the way?
Oh, I think I was getting pretty nervous about the war being on the way. And I got a number of films at the time which suggested war was coming, and even showed what it would be like Things to Come and that sort of thing. And I was quite nervous about that. Of course, my father had been in the First World War, and I knew all about that, which, looking back, wasn't far in the past at that time, of course. And yes, I was aware it was coming, particularly as we could see what was going on around the south coast. They were building one of the big radar chain stations at Pevensey. Nobody knew what it was. They thought it was a device for stopping aero engines. But we used to cycle out and look at this and wonder about it. And we knew something was coming. And so it wasn't much of a surprise when it finally did.
Did your father talk much about his First World War experience?
Quite a bit, yes. Yes, he did. Well, he was saw it from various angles, because he was in the Life Guards, because naturally a cavalry regiment, he was a huntsman. And he, for a long time, looked after the horses of the general in command of the cavalry division. And the cavalry division as such never did very much. But he got on good terms with the general, and he used to go and see him after the war. In fact, I went up to London with him when he used to call on the general. But General Kavanagh, this was. But then after that, he was allotted to the Guards Machine Gun Regiment. So he saw a lot of frontline activities as well, and was gassed, among other things. But he had a lot to say about the First World War, which, I mean, looking back, it was recent history to him, wasn't it? I mean, much nearer than the Second World War is to me, for example.
Did it affect his attitude towards what was to come and
your own? No, well, I think his actual removals business went bust in a funny way, because most of his business was for the Brighton Co-op, and they dissolved for some reason, so a large chunk of his business was taken away, and so he had to sell up. And he, for a year or two, he was a bit of a loose end, and it didn't do him any good, really. But as soon as the war came, he was an ideal person to be a senior air raid warden. And this kept him going very nicely for the rest of the war. Although there were quite a lot of quite bad incidents down there. I mean, Eastbourne was front line point, really. But on the whole, I should think the war saved him in a way. It's a funny thing to say, but it did. As a person, I think.
What was your reaction on hearing the news that war had been declared?
Well, alarm, I suppose. and I was very worried about, you know, I was worried about the fact that you take these things personally. I thought I'd probably have to go in the army, which I did, of course. But it's, although I was coming up to 17, you know, I could see that if it went on anything like as long as the first one, I'd be caught up in it. When the actual announcement was made, I was already doing a kind of messenger service for evacuees, because evacuees were coming into Eastbourne, and one of the centres was a school which I was attached to as a messenger cyclist, really. And I remember leaning on the bike and listening to a radio in the front of the school and hearing Chamberlain give his address. But, you know, I can't remember after that. Because, and then there were things like, well, you had a blackout, obviously, and putting paper on the windows to stop them breaking, but also anti-gas precautions, because we had a gas alert in the middle of one night. We all had to go down to the cellar and seal the doors, and get the gas masks out, that sort of thing. But it all came to nothing, that one. There never was a gas raid on Eastbourne or anywhere else.
Did you have any idea as to how, well, how long the war would be? And
no.
It's
no. I remember thinking it looked pretty bad and was going to make it a lot worse when Russia came in on the wrong side. But beyond that, you couldn't imagine when it would ever end, I suppose.
For the first few months of the early stages, you mentioned the gas drills and so on, but how much did it change or have an impact on your day-to-day life?
Not a lot, I don't think. And I can't think what the effect was now. You seem to carry on much as before. Yeah. And of course, I was also worried at the time about the results of the school survey, which I passed all right, by the way. And I could have gone on, but I didn't. I was called to the higher. So I never went to university in the end. But I'm not bothered now about that. I wasn't bothered then because I didn't want to go. I didn't want to leave home. I was that sort of person, I think.
That was because... Was that because you wanted to go straight to work?
No, I didn't want to go to work either, really. But I wanted to stay comfortably at home, I think. But nothing works out like that, does it?
What sort of atmosphere did you find as the war progressed into 1940 and then there were the setbacks and reversals in Norway and France and so on?
Well, see, another thing was I also had an elder brother who was in France, and it didn't escape from Dunkirk. It was after Dunkirk. It got away from one of the other ports, which I can't remember at the moment. But anyway, there was also the family worry about him. And not only that, he then went to the desert and was reported missing. And, of course, this was a terrible blow. By that time, the family had moved to Bedford. When I told you I went to stay with my grandmother, I did. My grandmother was at Bedford, but in fact, my mother came and rented a house in Bedford for a time. She then moved back to Eastbourne, and that's when I went and actually lived with my grandparents. But while she was still in Bedford, before I was called up, my brother was reported missing, and we had a War Office telegram, you know, and this was of course a tremendous blow. But I remember my father coming up from Eastport, because he had to stay there because he was a warden, you see, and by the time I was called up, he was still missing. But in fact, he was all right. He'd been taken prisoner, and he escaped from a prison camp on Crete. He'd been taken to Crete, escaped from a prison camp, and lived for 6 months with bandits in the mountains in Crete before being rescued from there and coming back to England. And he was also took part in the Normandy operations, but by that time he was on the staff of 12th Corps, so he was in a safer position by then. All this sounds like a tall story, but this is what happened to him. But actually, worrying about him was a major thing. My mother was, of course, in a terrible state. But somehow, we got a kind of unofficial message. Well, it's from the War Office, but it said, although we can't make any definite statement, unofficially we believe that he may be a prisoner, you see. So I don't know the ins and outs of that. But that made it a bit more hopeful.
When was it that you moved to Bedford?
Well, it was like October 1940, something like that. Battle of Britain time. Can't give you a precise date, but that's more or less when it was.
Did you see much of the battles?
No. No, I never did. Well, we saw a lot of planes, but actual combat I didn't see. No, not at that point.
What was people's to what degree were people concerned over the likelihood of a German invasion before you moved?
Quite a lot, because that was one of the reasons. This is complicated too. At the height of the scare of there being an invasion, my mother at that point stayed in Eastbourne, but my sister and I moved to Bedford temporarily. But when it looked as though nothing was immediately going to happen, my father kindly got me a job in Eastbourne, and after 3 weeks I went back down there, and this was a job on a petrol pump at a garage. He happened to know the owner of the garage. But after 3 weeks of that, they evacuated the whole town of Eastbourne. I mean, anybody who hadn't got a vital job was evacuated. So we trooped off to Bedford again then, and shortly after that, everybody, I mean, all my family, except my father, moved to Bedford. You forget the details of this after. Yes, that's what happened.
On the domestic side of things, how was your day-to-day life being changed as the war progressed?
Well, as the war progressed, you see, well, obviously it was very different because I'd moved to a different place, and instead of being at school or hanging around doing nothing, I got a job, because I got a job in the library at Bedford, you see, where, unknown to me, I was going to be ever after, in fact. But I was there as a temporary assistant, and I was there till I was called up, which, without jumping the gun, was August 42.
Had you found the introduction of rationing and the adapting to the wartime life difficult at all?
I don't remember being worried about rationing at all. there were, of course, even at Bedford, although it had an easy time during the war, there were raids and alarms and the like and all that sort of thing. And when they had the Coventry raid, there's a landmine was dropped by a returning bomber just outside Bedford, and then a lot of incendiary raids in some of the outskirts. But it didn't amount to much compared with most towns. So although we were a bit worried about it, I can't remember it dominating our lives. And I can tell you, as far as I was concerned, what did dominate my life was the arrival of the BBC music department at Bedford, who had gone to Bristol from London and were then evacuated from Bristol to Bedford. So we had the BBC Symphony Orchestra actually stationed at Bedford giving concerts every week. Well, there were public concerts every couple of weeks, but if you knew how, you could get tickets for studio concerts. So for most of that time as at Bedford, I went to a concert at least once a week, perhaps more. And I suppose that changed my life in a funny way, because all the major musicians who were around in England, or even coming from America and Spain even, were performing in Bedford. And this is a wonderful crash course in music. And not only that, the various other departments were there, and well-known people came and lived in Bedford, but I had nothing to do with them. But we had people like Clark Gable, who was serving the... You remember Clark Gable? And James Stewart, and Marlena Dietrich was a visitor. But Glenn Miller was a regular person and gave concerts in the Corn Exchange, but I never actually heard him. That wasn't really my line. And in fact, he died flying from Bedford or just outside. But it was a hotbed of activity, you know. So instead of being a little country town, it was suddenly a kind of international glamour HQ. So this made a big difference to me. Well, the music part of it did, very much.
Did you play an instrument yourself?
No. I'd never had anything to do with music, whatever. But I caught on to it suddenly.
What happened then when it was time for you to be called up?
What happened?
In terms of the
well,
process?
Well, I mean, obviously I'd had been called to a medical. I must have been to two medicals. I had something in Bedford, but also went to one in St Albans for some reason. But then as I came home from work, I had to say that I got a report to Bodmin in Cornwall in just over a week's time. So that was that then.
Had you any choice in which branch of the services?
No. No. Well, if I had, I didn't exercise the choice. I just sort of let it all roll on. And I, of course, when I went, Bodmin was an infantry training centre, which everybody did. And there was a peculiar thing there, because I didn't pretend to be any good as an infantry man. And in any case, I was very bad at marching, because I got badly fitting boots, which was my fault. In the course of a long route march to Brown Willie, which is a mountain hill on Bodmin Moor, I developed a septic toe, which actually gave me trouble 20 years later. But anyway, that didn't help. But one interview I had, which was a sort of a psychiatric officer, he asked a lot of questions like you're doing now. And I could see the thing upside down, and he got a thing saying potential officer, and he ticked this, you see, and I thought that's surprising. And then at the passing out parade at the end of the 6 weeks course, suddenly a number of people were called out into a separate squad who were potential officers, and one of them was me, and I didn't know till I heard the name called out anything about this. And that's the last time I think anybody suggested I was a potential officer, except I did when I went to the training regiment, which the RAC training regiment, Royal Armoured Corps training regiment, which was at Violet Castle, County Durham. I did then have an interview, and unexpectedly had to go over an assault course to see how I did it, which was a bit alarming because I didn't like that sort of thing at all. And so this must have been in connection, but I never, needless to say, to cut a long story short, ever became an officer or wanted to be, and I think I would have been no good at that.
Were you aware what it was that they were, that they'd been looking for in potential officers?
I don't think I was really, but I mean, whatever it was, I'm pretty sure I hadn't got it.
How was the camp at Bodmin laid out?
How was it laid out? Well, it was just a lot of large number of scattered Nissen huts. It was the headquarters of the Duke of Cornwall's Light Infantry, really, and had been adapted as Number 11 Primary Training Centre, I think it was called. I don't know, 6 weeks. And it was all right in a way. I can't remember it was particularly terrible. That's rather faded into the past, Bodmin. I've been back since, actually, had a look at it from the gate, but as I happened to be in Bodmin, I couldn't fail to go and see this.
How did you find you adjusted to the military lifestyle?
Well, I would say badly at Bodmin. I didn't like it at all. I didn't like the people. But it wasn't long, I would say, before I adapted quite well when I actually got a regiment. But I would say I wasn't very good at it until it came to the actual war, when I think I was probably all right then. It's hard to describe this, but I wasn't particularly good at certainly not at things like drill, but even at the technicalities of running a tank. But when I found myself actually thrown into it in the war, it seemed to all click into place. I was all right then, and ever after that. It's hard to explain that, but put it this way: I didn't like it at all at Bodmin. I gradually I got to know a lot of people, obviously, when I went to the regiment, and when it came to the being demobbed, I was quite sorry to go, because the worry of having to do a job other than the army came to loom rather large then. It was all right in the end.